The Story of a Soul by St. Thérèse of Lisieux. Chapter 2, Part 2. The feasts! What precious memories these simple words bring to me! I loved them, and my sisters knew so well how to explain the mysteries hidden in each holy day. Those days of earth became days of heaven. Above all, I loved the procession of the Blessed Sacrament. What a joy it was to strew flowers in God's path! But before scattering them on the ground, I threw them high in the air, and was never so happy as when I saw my rose petals touch the sacred monstrance. And if the great feasts came but seldom, each week brought one very dear to my heart. And that was Sunday. What a glorious day! The feast of God! The day of rest! First of all, the whole family went to High Mass, and I remember that before the sermon we had to come down from our places, which were some way from the pulpit, and find seats in the nave. This was not always easy, but to little Thérèse and her father everyone offered a place. My uncle was delighted when he saw us come down. He called me his sunbeam, and said that to see the venerable old man leading his little daughter by the hand was a sight which always filled him with joy. I never troubled myself if people looked at me. I was only occupied in listening attentively to the preacher. A sermon on the Passion of our Blessed Lord was the first I understood, and it touched me deeply. I was then 5 1/2, and after that time I was able to understand and appreciate all instructions. If St. Teresa were mentioned, my father would bend down and whisper to me, "Listen attentively, little queen. He is speaking of your holy patroness." I really did listen attentively. But I must own I looked at Papa more than at the preacher, for I read many things in his face. Sometimes his eyes were filled with tears, which he strove in vain to keep back. And as he listened to the eternal truths, he seemed no longer of this earth. His soul was absorbed in the thought of another world. Alas! Many long and sorrowful years had to pass before heaven was to be opened to him, and our Lord, with his own divine hand, was to wipe away the bitter tears of his faithful servant. To go back to the description of our Sundays. This happy day, which passed so quickly, had also its touch of melancholy. My happiness was full till Compline, but after that a feeling of sadness took possession of me. I thought of the morrow when one had to begin again the daily life of work and lessons, and my heart, feeling like an exile on this earth, longed for the repose of heaven, the never-ending Sabbath of our true home. Every Sunday my aunt invited us in turns to spend the evening with her. I was always glad when mine came, and it was a pleasure to listen to my uncle's conversation. His talk was serious, but it interested me, and he little knew that I paid such attention. But my joy was not unmixed with fear when he took me on his knee and sang Bluebeard in his deep voice. About 8 o'clock, Papa would come to fetch me. I remember that I used to look up at the stars with inexpressible delight. Orion's belt fascinated me especially, for I saw in it a likeness to the letter T. "Look, Papa," I would cry, "my name is written in heaven." Then, not wishing to see this dull earth any longer, I asked him to lead me, and with my head thrown back I gazed unweariedly at the starry skies. I could tell you much about our winter evenings at home. After a game of draughts, checkers, my sisters read aloud Dom Guéranger's liturgical year, and then a few pages of some other interesting and instructive book. While this was going on, I established myself on Papa's knee, and when the reading was done, he used to sing soothing snatches of melody in his beautiful voice, as if to lull me to sleep, and I would lay my head on his breast while he rocked me gently to and fro. Later on, we went upstairs for night prayers, and there again my place was beside my beloved father, and I had only to look at him to know how the saints pray. Pauline put me to bed, and I invariably asked her, "Have I been good today? Is God pleased with me? Will the angels watch over me?" The answer was always, "Yes." Otherwise I should have spent the whole night in tears. After these questions, my sisters kissed me, and little Thérèse was left alone in the dark. I look on it as a real grace that from childhood I was taught to overcome my fears. Sometimes in the evening Pauline would send me to fetch something from a distant room. She would take no refusal, and she was quite right, for otherwise I should have become very nervous, whereas now it is difficult to frighten me. I wonder sometimes how my little mother was able to bring me up with so much tenderness, and yet without spoiling me, for she did not pass over the least fault. It is true she never scolded me without cause, and I knew well she would never change her mind when once a thing was decided upon. To this dearly loved sister I confided my most intimate thoughts. She cleared up all my doubts. One day I expressed surprise that God does not give an equal amount of glory to all the elect in heaven. I was afraid that they would not all be quite happy. She sent me to fetch Papa's big tumbler and put it beside my little thimble. Then, filling both with water, she asked me which seemed the fuller. I replied that one was as full as the other. It was impossible to pour more water into either of them, for they could not hold it. In this way, Pauline made it clear to me that in heaven the least of the blessed does not envy the happiness of the greatest. And so, by bringing the highest mysteries down to the level of my understanding, she gave my soul the food it needed. Joyfully each year I welcomed the prize day. Though I was the only competitor, justice was nonetheless strictly observed, and I never received rewards unless they were well merited. My heart used to beat with excitement when I heard the decisions, and in the presence of the whole family received prizes from Papa's hands. It was to me like a picture of the judgment day. Seeing Papa so cheerful, no suspicion of the terrible trials which awaited him crossed my mind. But one day God showed me in an extraordinary vision a vivid picture of the trouble to come. My father was away on a journey and could not return as early as usual. It was about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The sun was shining brightly, and all the world seemed gay. I was alone at the window, looking on to the kitchen garden, my mind full of cheerful thoughts, when I saw before me, in front of the wash-house, a man dressed exactly like Papa, of the same height and appearance, but more bent and aged. I say, aged, to describe his general appearance, for I did not see his face, as his head was covered with a thick veil. He advanced slowly, with measured step, along my little garden. At that instant, a feeling of supernatural fear seized me, and I called out loudly in a trembling voice, "Papa! Papa!" The mysterious person seemed not to hear. He continued his walk without even turning, and went toward a clump of firs which grew in the middle of the garden. I expected to see him reappear at the other side of the big trees, but the prophetic vision had vanished. It was all over in a moment, but it was a moment which impressed itself so deeply on my memory that even now, after so many years, the remembrance of it is as vivid as the vision itself. My sisters were all together in an adjoining room. Hearing me call, "Papa!" they were frightened themselves. But Marie, hiding her feelings, ran to me and said, "Why are you calling Papa when he is at Alençon?" I told her what I had seen. And to reassure me, they said that Nurse must have covered her head with her apron on purpose to frighten me. Victoire, however, when questioned, declared she had not left the kitchen. Besides, the truth was too deeply impressed on my mind. I had seen a man, and that man was exactly like my father. We all went to look behind the clump of trees, and finding nothing, my sisters told me to think no more about it. Ah, that was not in my power. Often and often my imagination brought before me this mysterious vision. Often and often I tried to raise the veil which hid its true meaning. And deep down in my heart I had a conviction that some day it would be fully revealed to me. And you know all, dear mother. You know that it was really my father whom God showed me, bent by age, and bearing on his venerable face and his white head the symbol of his terrible trial. As the adorable face of Jesus was veiled during his passion, so it was fitting that the face of his humble servant should be veiled during the days of his humiliation, in order that it might shine with greater brilliancy in heaven. How I admire God's ways! He showed us this precious cross beforehand, as a father shows his children the glorious future he is preparing for them, a future which will bring them an inheritance of priceless treasures. But a thought comes into my mind. Why did God give this light to a child who, if she had understood it, would have died of grief? Why? Here is one of those incomprehensible mysteries which we shall only understand in heaven, where they will be the subject of our eternal admiration. My God, how good thou art! How well dost thou suit the trial to our strength! At that time, I had not courage even to think that Papa could die without being terrified. One day, he was standing on a high stepladder, and as I was close by, he called out, "Move away, little queen! If I fall, I shall crush you!" Instantly I felt an inward shock, and going still nearer to the ladder, I thought, "At least if Papa falls, I shall not have the pain of seeing him die, for I shall die with him." I could never say how much I loved him. I admired everything he did. When he explained his ideas on serious matters, as if I were a big girl, I answered him naively, "It is quite certain, Papa, that if you spoke like that to the great men who govern the country, they would take you and make you king. Then France would be happier than it has ever been. But you would be unhappy, because that is the lot of kings. Besides, you would no longer be my king alone. So I am glad that they do not know you. When I was 6 or 7 years old, I saw the sea for the first time. The sight made a deep impression on me. I could not take my eyes off it. Its majesty and the roar of the waves all spoke to my soul of the greatness and power of God. I remember when we were on the beach, a man and woman looked at me for a long time. Then, asking Papa if I were his child, they remarked that I was a very pretty little girl. Papa at once made a sign to them not to flatter me. I was delighted to hear what they said, for I did not think I was pretty. My sisters were most careful never to talk before me in such a way as to spoil my simplicity and childish innocence. And because I believed so implicitly in them, I attached little importance to the admiration of these people, and thought no more about it. That evening, at the hour when the sun seems to sink into the vast ocean, leaving behind it a trail of glory, I sat with Pauline on a bare rock and gazed for long on this golden furrow, which she told me was an image of grace illumining the way of faithful souls here below. Then I pictured my soul as a tiny ship with a graceful white sail in the middle of the furrow, and I resolved never to let it withdraw from the sight of Jesus, so that it might sail peacefully and quickly toward the heavenly shore. Notes on Chapter 2. Mother Genevieve, this holy nun, had been professed at the Carmel of Poitiers, and was sent from there to make the foundation of Lisieux in 1838. Her memory is held in benediction in both these convents. In the sight of God, she constantly practiced the most heroic virtue, and on December 5, 1891, crowned a life of good works by a holy death. She was then 86 years of age. Les Buissonnets. This house, an object of deep interest to the clients of Sœur Thérèse, is much frequented by pilgrims to Lisieux. First Confession. This first confession was made in the beautiful church of Saint-Pierre, formerly the cathedral of Lisieux. Thérèse's father's trials. It seemed advisable, on account of the vague allusions which occur here and elsewhere, to state what happened to Monsieur Louis Martin. At the age of 66, having already had several partial attacks, he was struck with general paralysis, and his mind gave way altogether. End of Chapter 2.